If you were to write and deliver the greatest sermon of all time, all history, greatest sermon that will ever be given and recorded for mankind, how would you conclude that message? How would you end it? Would it be inspirational? Would it be emotional? Would you, you know, end with an encouragement, a stir to action? Honestly, that's what I would do. I would end with kind words. I would want people to put it into action. But let me ask you this. Would you end it with four warnings of disaster and a parable on home building? Now, I'm a home builder, and I wouldn't have thought of that. I would not end the world's greatest sermon on four terrifying messages about destruction and a parable on home building. But Christ and God did just that. God is a builder, of course, as a creator. He not only creates, builds matter, but he built the systems. He designed, engineered the science, the physics of putting it all together. Of course, he is a builder. And we know that we are created in his image, not to build in a way that God builds, but we do build. We build relationships. We build families. We build, some of us, I'm a home builder, we build buildings perhaps. We create things, friendships. We build relationships in and out of the church. So we do build things. And that's, of course, natural because it's part of the very nature, the very abilities and talents that God created mankind with. But there, it's interesting, the word build itself means that something has to be done. We could talk about building something. We could plan it. We could design it. We could engineer it. We can talk about it forever. But until we actually do something about the building process, there's nothing actually built. I understand that that design process is a part of building. But as far as actually getting something complete, something that is useful, something that's of value, there is no value in construction until that building or facility is actually constructed. So it's important that we actually do something. The Sermon on the Mount, which of course is the greatest sermon ever recorded, perhaps that will ever be recorded. It gives us many things, of course. Many people quote the Sermon on the Mount. It is considered, of course, the Christian constitution, if you will. It's all about discipleship. It's got a lot of information. Of course, it's contained Matthew 5, 6, and 7 primarily. It contains the Beatitudes, the Lord's Prayer, and many other parables and lessons. It's the longest single discourse of Christ recorded, of course, in the New Testament. But it ends with four distinct warnings of destruction, and it actually uses the word destruction, not in all four cases, but it describes destruction and ends with a parable that tells us, each of us, not just one of us, not the minister or the church or your spouse or your children, it tells us that all of us are either wise builders or foolish builders. There's no exception. There's no multi-tenant buildings. There's no high-rise apartments that we're a part of that will be evaluated by. We are each constructing our own building, our own house, spiritually speaking. And we're one or the other. There's no in-between. There's no gray area. There's not category C, D, or E. It's either wise builder or foolish builders. And we'll see, of course, the application today and what we can learn from these lessons. Philippians 2, verse 12, you don't need to turn there, tells us, work out your own salvation. Again, it's a reminder that we are each, you know, your own salvation, that we are each constructing a house. We're each building our house, if you will, and there's no exceptions to that. If I were to ask you a question, I always find this fascinating. I'm up early every morning. I watch TV while I eat breakfast. The most frequent advertisers in the morning, at least, what I have found is lawyers, car dealers, prescription drugs, and what? The fourth. Anybody want to guess what the fourth is? Foundation repair. Foundation repair. It's a sign, it's an indication to me as a builder that things just simply weren't constructed correctly. It's not a matter of a building develops issues. It was constructed with issues. And we'll see that as we go through. Because if you ask people, you know, is poor construction of the house, the part that you see, you know, the walls, even the foundation, the crawl space, the first floor walls, the second floor, the roof, are those the issues that cause foundation repair? Of course, the answer is no. It's the part that you don't see. It's the part that is underground that causes, originates those issues. In this parable that we'll see, also tells us the same thing. It's not what you see, it's what you don't see, the character that we put into building our own house that's important. A footing or a foundation serves several purposes. Of course, it's load-bearing. There's a vertical component to hold the weight of the structure. We understand that, generally speaking. Distributes the weight of the building down onto or into the ground. There's a, of course, lateral component to it. If the footing foundation is solid, you know, the building won't rack. It provides horizontal stability. And, of course, quality. The better a footing and foundation is, if it's plumb, you know, if it's level, if it's square. You know, I've seen houses, thankfully not ones that I've constructed, but houses where you go in and you see that the footing, the very bottommost part of a structure, is actually inaccurate in the block layer, laid block right off of that footing into the dirt because they didn't take time to correct it. And you see those kinds of things, hence the commercials for foundation repair. So again, a foundation, a footing, has many functions. The science of poor quality or issues that can arise, of course, if it's not stable, there's going to be issues of settling. Water damage, water gets in around a building, it freezes, it contracts, causes damage. If it's too dry, of course, dry soil shrinks, allows more water in, it can actually create voids under a footing. So again, that science of a footing, the purpose and the science of a footing, all those issues are addressed if you do what? If you build on a rock, something very solid. Everything that I've just described is a non-issue. Rock is solid. It's strong. It doesn't expand and contract because it's deep enough. It maintains a constant temperature. It doesn't absorb water per se. So again, building on a rock is the solution, even in today's modern world of construction. So if you would, turn to Matthew 7. Matthew 7. We're going to begin in verse 13. Again, this is inside the world's greatest sermon. Christ's gives this, of course, message early in his ministry. Again, Matthew 7 will begin in verse 13. We're going to look at the context. So I often heard messages about building on Christ, the rock, and it's an obvious important point. But you'll see it's not actually the meaning or the purpose of the parable. It's a fact of the parable, but it's not actually the point of the parable. And in context of this last and final part of the Sermon on the Mount, the wise and foolish builders, it's interesting that the context, it's within four warnings. Again, I would not have ended a sermon that way. It's brilliant, it's powerful, it's timeless for us, for all mankind who will ever live. So let's begin, again, Matthew 7, verse 13. This is the first warning, which is the narrow versus the wide path. So again, Matthew 7, verse 13. Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. There are few that find life. That's a result that results in destruction. It's interesting, the word difficult here in this passage means to crowd, to press as grapes, press hard upon a compressed way. The right way of life, of living Christian discipleship, it's difficult. It's a hard thing to do. It takes effort. It takes work. It takes putting what we learn into practice. That's obviously the point. The opposite of that, the very easy way, the way that has shortcuts, the way that says I'll do it my way or I won't implement the things that I learn, is easy. And wide is that way. It's not constricted. It's not pressed hard. It's easy to go that way of little effort, little concern, little changing, little repentance, little implementing God's way into our lives. Because we can learn, we can read, we can listen to sermons, messages, we can even go to church and still not put into practice the things that we hear. And again, so the first warning, which is, hey, it's difficult to do this, to live this way, and it's easy to follow the broad path that leads to destruction, that does not result in life. So that's the first warning. The second warning, again, in context, that's we're trying to set the context, the stage for the fourth warning, which is the wise and foolish builders. The second warning begins in verse 15, and it's regarding the good tree versus the bad tree. So let's read, again, we're still in Matthew 7, verse 15. We'll begin reading Matthew 7, verse 15. "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit." Verse 19, "Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them." So again, if you notice, the negative side of this warning, is that if a tree doesn't bear good fruit, if it doesn't actually produce something, it may have all the components necessary, the ground, the water, the sunlight, you know, lack of disease or insects, it may have all the components necessary, but unless it bears fruit, it leads to destruction. It's cast down and thrown into the fire. Of course, the flip side of that is, a good tree must bear good fruit. It takes effort. It takes purpose. It takes implementing the components, taking the water, taking the nutrients, taking the sunlight, putting up a resistance to wind, to weather, to insect, to disease, to fungus, to mold, and produce good fruit. Without that, that tree is of no use. It may have had all the benefits, but without fruit, it's worthless. And that's quite a warning that says a fruitless tree gets burned. That's destruction. The third warning, again, these are all in context, in sequence, that leads up to what I think is one of the most key parables in all of Scripture, and that's wise and foolish builders. The third warning, third parable, begins in verse 21, and that's about words and works versus God's will. It progresses. Let's begin in verse 21. Again, we're in Matthew 7, verse 21. "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?'" Verse 23, "And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" Again, it's telling us that without doing the will of God, it doesn't say without understanding the will, without reading the will, without believing in the will of God. It says, he who does the will, key word obviously is does. Yeah, I give messages, of course, that apply to myself. I feel like, you know, I've grown in knowledge and understanding over the years. I feel that. But there are times I look at my life and I say, you know, I'm not sure I'm doing more with it. So again, doing the will of my Father is the hard part. It's the part that takes effort. It takes discipline. It may take scheduling. You know, I rearrange your schedule to allow you to do the things that you know you should do. To pray, to read, study. Those things don't happen by chance. It's the hard way. It takes effort. It takes planning. It takes purpose. It takes implementing these things in our lives. You know, to have, you know, love, joy, patience, kindness, meekness, gentleness, long-suffering, patience, endurance. Those things are things that we have to put into our lives. They're not just based on understanding. There takes, of course, action to do those things. Of course, all of which could be multiple messages. But doing the will of my Father, it says, is the narrow way. It's the difficult way. It's the way that's marked and characterized by effort. The opposite result is, I never knew you, depart from me. That's destruction. That's an end, an outcome that we never want to have said or hear of us, our children, our spouse, our friends. We don't ever want to hear those words. I never knew you, depart from me. So again, that parable also ends in destruction. The flip side, it shows the way that we have to go is not easy. Doing the will of God is bearing fruit. Doing the will of God is the narrow gate. So again, they're all consistent, and they're all saying the same thing in different ways. The points of emphasis to me, as he gets to what I think is a climax in warning and climax in meaning, is the very last parable, which begins in verse 24. Verse 24, which is where we'll spend the rest of the message. Let's look at, again, Matthew 7, verse 24. The fourth warning is hearing versus doing, because we hear a lot of things. You're hearing me now. You know, you hear messages, you may listen to messages, MP3s, online, watch videos. We can read literature. Again, those are all important parts of doing God's will. I understand that. But until they are reflected in our lives, it's just knowledge. It's just something we know. We can look at the Pharisees. They were geniuses. They were lawyers. They were, you know, scribes. Again, they were geniuses at the law, but they didn't reflect what they knew, what they should have known in their lives, and that's the key. Christ actually describes them as lawless, which is interesting. So again, let's look at verse 24, Matthew 7, the fourth warning, fourth parable. We'll begin reading in verse 24. Therefore, again, so he's drawing a conclusion. Therefore, as a result of the things I've previously covered, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house. And it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. Verse 26, of course, describes the foolish builder. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them, doesn't say doesn't understand them or rejects them. It says, who does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand, and the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. Verse 28, and so it was, then Jesus had, when he had ended these sayings, that the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Again, the greatest sermon that will ever be given ends with this parable. It's fascinating. There's so much in here, as we would expect. If you notice, the word foolish here in this parable, it doesn't say ignorant, that they didn't understand. It doesn't say somebody without the truth. It uses the word foolish, which means dull or stupid, i.e. heedless. I think it's an important word. Somebody who hears the sayings of mine, it says, but they don't heed the information. They don't act on it. That man, God says, is foolish. So it's an important word. And of course, we notice in the parable, it also ends in destruction. It emphasizes it twice. And it fell, and great was its fall. You know, at trial, at final judgment, that house is destroyed. It's of no value. So the first thing I want to do in really explaining, understanding, and digging deeper into this parable is I want to look at seven, and these are pretty quick, seven similarities. And this is what I found really the most fascinating part of this parable, is there are seven similarities between the two builders. You know, I've heard messages, maybe I wasn't paying attention, but you know, I hear, you know, build on Christ, he's the rock. And that's a key point. It's a fact of the parable, but it's really not the lesson of the parable. It's not what we're to get out of it. Again, both builders know to build a rock, and we'll look at that later. But the seven similarities, the first is both hear the teachings of Christ. It's not that one heard and one didn't hear. It says clearly, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will like him to a wise builder, and then subsequently, but everyone who hears these things of mine and does not do them. So again, a similarity is that they both hear the teachings of God. And the implication is they understand it. They understand it. Because if they didn't understand it, then they wouldn't be called, they wouldn't be responsible. So again, it's important that both builders hear the teachings. That's one similarity. The second similarity is both choose an okay location. If that weren't true, then the parable would lose meaning. If I could say as a wise or foolish builder that, well, I didn't have a good location. It's my background. It's my family. It's my upbringing. It's because I'm in Nashville. If I were in Boise, Idaho, my life, my calling, my ability to practice my discipleship correctly would be different, then the parable obviously has no meaning. So it's not subject to the location. They both build. Some commentaries that I read actually, you know, point out, oh, one builder took the time to evaluate and find the better location. Again, that might be a true thing, but it's not the intent of the parable because it doesn't bring that out. So they both choose locations that are okay. And I know that because you can hit rock anywhere on earth. There is nowhere on this planet that you dig or could dig and not run into rock eventually. The question is how deep. How deep? Some places, you know, it might be 8 inches of topsoil and you're looking at rock. You can be driving down the interstate and you're looking at rock outcroppings. You could be at the bottom of the ocean, at the deepest part of the ocean, dig a hole and you're eventually going to hit rock. Now, that's not an ideal building spot, but there's rock everywhere. So again, it's not the location. A similarity between the two builders is that the location they select is not the issue. That's not the issue. They have that in common. The third similarity, it says both built his house. So again, it's obvious, but both builders, the wise and the foolish, both built their house. They didn't build somebody else's house. They didn't have somebody build their house. They built their own house. And that's an important distinguishing point in the parable, is that we're each responsible. We cannot look to somebody else, the church, the minister, the elders, your friends, your wife, your spouse, your children, your neighborhood, your state, your country, and say, you know what? They will be responsible for my building. You are responsible for your building, period. That's it. But they each build their own building. That's a similarity. The fourth similarity is that both house plans, if you want to call it that, or style, appear the same. There's not anything in the passage that distinguishes that outwardly these structures look different. In fact, I can prove, and we will here, that they both appear to look the same. You know, in context, which we've already read, Matthew 7, verses 15 through 20, you remember the false prophets, what, they look like wolves, right? They're false prophets they're wolves in sheep's clothing. But they're not distinguished by their outward appearance. That's the point of that parable, or part of the points. Matthew 7, verses 21 through 23. Those deceived by their outward righteousness, they look right. They look righteous. They're prophesying. They're casting out demons. They're healing. Maybe they're doing mission trips. They're doing all these good things. So outwardly is not the issue, because you cannot distinguish between a wise and foolish builder on what you can see. Someone may walk they walk the part, so to speak. Maybe not in every detail in their active lives, but they look the part, I should say. They attend church. They sing. They may give opening and closing prayers. They may do anything that you think is religious, per se. But if they're not implementing all the things that Christ is teaching, again, we all fall short, of course. But if they're not implementing the things in actions in their life, then they're not a wise builder. They're foolish builders. So again, we have to realize that Christ is given four warnings. This is already the fourth one. It says, you know, enter by the narrow gate, the difficult way. You know, bear fruit as a good tree will. Do the will of my Father. It's not what you say. It's not even the things, Lord, Lord, you say these things. But if you're not doing the will of God, then he says, I never knew you. It results in destruction. And of course, this fourth one, it says, hears these things of mine and does them. That's what the wise builder does. So again, the fourth point being that both houses, the plans, are the same. That's not the point of the parable. It's not that, hey, if he built a neoclassical house, that would have been good, or a craftsman style or American prairie style. It's not the style of the house. Each of those is different. But again, it's not the point of the parable. My house might look different than yours, but what's important is below what you don't see. A fifth commonality, a fifth way that these builders are similar, is they both used similar materials. It's the same logic. There's nothing in the parable that would say, oh, builder A, the wise builder, had access to granite, to limestone, to all these building materials. And as a result of what he had available, he builds a house that is wise, that's prudent, that is enduring. And the other builder who lives maybe in another geographic area, all he's got is soft pine wood. He's on sandy area, and it's not his fault. He didn't have the resources. So it's not the building materials. Because it says clearly, therefore, who hears these sayings of mine, it says it both of the wise and foolish builder. So that would be the building materials. What they heard is the same. So again, it's not the building materials. A sixth similarity between the two builders, the wise and the foolish. And this is very important. Because again, many commentaries, I thought, different sources, articles even, got this wrong as far as I could tell. Both builders had the expertise and knowledge. Both builders share the expertise and the knowledge. I'm a home builder, and I can tell you there is no builder in Tennessee or even in the United States who does not know to build that you cannot build on sand. There's no builder because they wouldn't be a builder. You cannot be a builder and know, oh, I'm going to build on a mire or on quicksand or on sand, or I'm just going to go out there and start building a house on top of my lawn. You wouldn't be a builder. They know that. Every builder knows not to build on sand, yet one chose to do that. And we'll see that is a key to the parable. Again, as I've already said, both builders says they hear these sayings of mine. That is the knowledge. That's the component of understanding. They had access to it. They understood it. So that's important. But the key is the word foolish, as I pointed out, means heedless. Why the builder is foolish is not his expertise. He may be a better builder, technically speaking, than the wise builder. The difference is he doesn't heed what he knows. He doesn't do, which is the point of the parable, the point of the four parables that we're reading, he doesn't do what he knows to do. And that's immensely different than just saying, well, the point of the parable is just build on Christ. Well, it's like saying, well, be righteous in everything you do. Well, the parable is telling us a very important point, and all four parables, in the form of warnings, truthfully, tells us you have to do what we know. And that's immensely important. And I know that's true. Luke 12, if you would turn to Luke 12, verse 47, because with knowledge, there's responsibility. Without knowledge, there's no responsibility or lesser responsibility. And we find that in Luke 12. We'll begin reading Luke 12, verse 47. Luke 12, verse 47. And that servant who knew his master's will, again, he heard these sayings of mine, and did not prepare himself or do according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. I'd say that's destruction. Verse 48, but he who did not know, yet committed these things deserving of stripes, shall be beaten with few. Again, there's still some responsibility, but not near the degree of someone who knows what to do. Continuing, for everyone to whom much is given, from him much will be required. And to whom much has been committed of him, they will ask the more. So again, with knowledge that both builders have, and the parable makes that distinctly clear because it uses the exact same words, here's these sayings of mine, and that's key. The foolish builder, he knew what to do. He knew what to do, but he makes a choice, and that's the difference. The seventh similarity between the two builders is both builders face trials and ultimately judgment. That's a similarity. It doesn't say that, hey, the foolish builder who did know what to do, but, you know, he slipped up. He was lazy. He didn't put in the effort. God understands, and he'll, through grace, he'll just say no big deal. It doesn't say that. It says his story ends in destruction. It says, and it fell, and great was its fall. So again, both builders face trials, and they know that because they're building a house, right? Neither builder said, hey, I'm going to build a house, and my house will not be subject to weather, to rain, to wind, to storms. The very intent, the very inherent meaning of a word house is shelter from the outdoors. So the builder didn't say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to worry about my house withstanding storms, rain, weather, winds. It's deeper than that. He doesn't care. He doesn't put in the effort. He doesn't make the right choice to build in a way, even though he knows better. And that's immensely different. Well, I want to focus now, as we move forward, on the four differences. What makes these two builders, the wise and the foolish, distinctly different from each other? We've looked at what they have in common, which is very important in understanding the meaning of the parables. So let's look at the four differences, the lessons, really, of what we can learn about what makes these two men uniquely different from each other. The first is, of course, what we normally hear and focus on, and rightly so. The wise man built his foundation on rock, which again represents Christ, the foolish on sand or earth. Again, that is important. But again, I've heard many messages. I'm not saying they're wrong. But again, we can focus on, well, Christ is the rock. Well, that's a fact, but that's not the point of the parable. The point of the parable is what you do with that. It's great to know that Christ is our rock, that if we build spiritually our house on Christ, we won't be moving, we won't be shaken, we won't fall, we'll stand the trials. And that's important. But how do we get there is really the point of the parables. All four parables, really. It's about doing something. You walk through a narrow gate, right? You bear fruit, which takes time and effort and energy. You do the will of God, which takes time and energy and effort, practice, repetition. It's not always about what we know. In fact, it's more often about what we do. And the wise builder gets that point. And I know so because the scripture tells me. So again, the first point, which we could give multiple sermons on, but the first point is one we often hear, and it's important, is that the wise man built his foundation on the rock. That's obvious. But the second point, the second difference between the two men is choice. Of course, I've said that before, but choice. The wise man dug deep. He put in effort, whereas the foolish man did not. It's not about knowing that Christ was the rock. The foolish builder knew, absolutely knew, that he has to build his house on rock if he wants it to endure. But he doesn't make that choice. He disregards and therefore is responsible for his own judgment. He ignores that. So again, the choice, if you would turn to Luke 6:48, we'll see why we know this for sure. Luke 6:48 gives us a distinct difference between these two men that if we don't understand, we simply can't understand the parable. And in fact, we really can't understand all four of these parables because they're all tied together. They're all in sequence. And Christ ends with the wise and foolish builder. It's what you do. And it's how you implement what we learn in our life. That's our house. And we're going to be judged on it, not just by trials, but ultimately judged. So again, Luke 6, we'll begin in verse 48. It's the same, of course, parallel account, Luke 6, verse 48. He is like a man building a house. Here's the difference. Who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently against that house and could not shake it, for it was founded on the rock. There's the difference. It didn't say, you know, it was knowledge, it was building materials, it was the style of the house, it was the location. No. The difference is one man, the wise builder, digs deep. Anybody ever use a shovel? They didn't have backhoes or mini excavators or track hoes back then. You pull out a shovel. I've done a lot of that lately. The coronavirus seems like, I don't know what the tie is between home projects and coronavirus, but my wife has found that connection for me, and I'm doing a lot more home projects, and I've been using a shovel a lot. Dirt is heavy. It's about 100 pounds per cubic feet, per cubic foot of dirt. Varies somewhat on moisture content and type of soil, but on average, a 12 by 12 piece of ground weighs 100 to 130 pounds. That's a lot of weight. And to move that weight with a shovel to dig down to rock at which you may not know the depth takes vision, takes foresight, takes determination, and above all, it takes what I call brute force effort. There's no mystery to digging. You get the shovel and you start digging. It's effort. It's an attitude of, I will get down to that rock because it's that important. So again, the difference is choice. The wise builder digs deep. He doesn't stop. He doesn't let anything deter him from getting to that rock. So again, that's obviously a crucial difference. We can say to ourselves, you know, I don't want to dig deep. I don't have the time. I don't have the effort. I don't have the understanding. I don't have the building materials. I don't have the location. I don't have the spouse, the wife, the children, the environment, the money, the wardrobe. I don't have the intellect. I don't have whatever it is we may put in there. But we can all work. Effort and energy, we all have that. That's why the parable is so important. That's why nobody escapes either category A, wise builder, or foolish builder. There's no in between. Both builders have the ability, we all have the ability, to put in effort, to dig deep. And it takes sometimes just a sheer brute will, I'm going to do this. It is so important to me. I know I should be patient. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to ask people to help point out my need for impatience. If I'm not patient with you, tell me. Whatever it may be, it's that important to me, and I'm going to keep working at this. Again, we find excuses. I can't speak for myself. You know, something's difficult, well, I'll find another way. I'll start digging over there. So we have a bunch of little holes that we've dug, but we never get down to the rock. We never actually get the building constructed. We can listen to more sermons. That's good. Nothing wrong with that. But if it doesn't result in action, actionable changes in our life, we're just digging, perhaps, without purpose. We've got to get down to that rock. That determination gets us there. So again, Luke's account tells us that the wise builder dug deep. Doesn't say how long it took him. Is it 1 month? Is it a week? Is it 10 years? We don't know. But he dug deep. Doesn't say shallow. It didn't say he got it done in a day. Doesn't say, well, he dug, it was not far below the surface. No, deep. What is deep? I Googled average depth of topsoil or depth of rock for middle Palestine area. And there's several accounts, but there are many places it's 30 feet deep. You get down through sand and different types of soils. Again, I would think that's not typical, but what if? What if you had to dig 30 feet deep for the whole size of your house, step back or terrace back your sides of that hole, that pit, with a shovel? It would represent only one thing, effort. Effort. The wise builder puts in the effort. The lazy man is foolish. Why? Because he doesn't heed his knowledge. He doesn't heed the warning. He just says, I scratched the surface, good enough. It's more important that my building look nice, that I have the vocabulary of Christianity, that I go to church. Again, those are action things that we do in our obedience. But if we're not implementing what we learned there, it's just another action. So again, we must build, of course, with effort, with heart, with vision, and for the long term. Hence, all the other parables in context. Narrow gate, that's digging. Bearing fruit on a tree, that's digging. Hearing these sayings of mine and does the will of my Father, that's digging. And his fourth one, hears the sayings of mine and does them, that's digging. That's digging deep. Nothing else is digging deep. It doesn't say attending services is digging deep. Reading your Bible every day, again, that's an important, obviously critical thing in understanding the mind of God. But if it doesn't result in change, if it doesn't result in something that's constructed, it may just be reading. Read, study, pray, which are all parts, all actions, and critically important. But again, we must be doing digging, constructing a house. We can plan, we can read, we can study, we can do the math, we can do the engineering, we can do the surveying. I can get the beams calculated. I can get all my headers, you know, do I use a timber strand? Do I use a micro lamb? Do I use what type of lumber? What's the span chart? I can get all that figured out. But until something gets built, all that is wasted time. Until something gets built, we've gone through a lot of exercises. Verse 49, again, we're still in Luke 6. We're talking about the choice. The choice for the wise man to dig deep, the foolish man does not dig deep. Again, Luke 6, verse 49, again, it gives a contrast. But he, again, talking about the foolish builder, who heard and did nothing, again, he heard, is like a man who built a house on the earth, which means soil, without a foundation, against which the stream beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. Again, same parable, parallel account, ends in destruction. What's interesting is it says he built on the earth, you know, soil. The other parable in Matthew said sand, but it says without a foundation. Not digging deep and building on the rock is equal to the exact same thing as having no foundation. It says right there, without a foundation. It's not half as good. It's not almost as good. It'll suffice. No, not building on the rock is equal to, it's the same thing as having no foundation. I thought I did a decent job. Well, again, we're all subject to our limitations. We're human. But again, it's important that the passage points out that when a foolish builder elects, he makes a decision not to implement the things that he hears in his constructing of his own house, spiritually speaking, it's like having no foundation at all. That's why it says, you know, when the rains come, it fell and great was its fall. It doesn't fall slowly. It collapses. The third, again, so that was the second difference, which was choice. You know, the wise builder, of course, chooses to build on the rock. The foolish builder chooses. It's not by error. It's not by mistake. He chooses not to build on the rock. The third of four differences, which we've alluded to, is that the wise builder heeds the warning of a severe storm. The foolish builder does not heed the warning. Again, I've already said this. I won't spend much time on it. But they know that a house is constructed for shelter of storms, for shelter of weather. The foolish builder doesn't think to himself, you know what? My house will never be subject to wind. It'll never be subject to rain, to cold, to variances in temperature, to shrinking and swelling of the soils, to storms. No, he knows that. But in his mind, there's some reason that he makes a different choice. He says, like we often do, I guess I speak for myself, well, it won't happen in my lifetime. That storm will be so far in the future, I'm not going to worry about it now. That storm that comes, I'll deal with it then. 2 days before Christ's return, I'll pray. I'll get forgiveness. I'll pray for God's Spirit. My lamp will be full, and I'll be ready to roll. No, that builder, the foolish builder, tells himself, I don't see the signs of a storm. The skies look good. It's blue skies. Bad weather rarely hits here. Severe weather, almost never. And he decides he doesn't value the words that he's heard. I don't value what I've been told, because if I tell you, hey, there's a boulder rolling down the mountain that's about to crush your house, if you believe me, you take action. You exit the house. But if you don't believe me, you don't value what I'm saying, you don't take action. We can say, well, I do value the word. I love God's word. I love God's truth. But I don't really put it into practice. Well, that's a form of hypocrisy, of course. To value something, to believe something, means that we're going to live it. We're going to put it into action. This builder, it's not that he doesn't know that his house will be required to withstand the storm. He decides it's just not important right now. I don't actually value the effort it will take to produce a house that will withstand that storm. Because the storm's so far off, I'll deal with it later. I'll mature later. I'll reinforce the walls of my house. I'll put in some pylons, some extra piers. I'll put in a wall to block the storm. Whatever they're thinking, they find some excuse why now is not the time to implement, to value, and construct, to take the effort to dig deep. Because again, the context of all three warnings tells us that it takes effort. Luke 12, verse 42, again, you don't need to, well, you can turn there if you like. Luke 12, verse 42, we'll read several verses, again, about heeding the warnings. Luke 12, verse 42. And the Lord said, "Who then is that faithful and wise steward, whom his master will make ruler over his household to give them their portion of food in due season?" Verse 43, "Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes." Didn't say will find knowledgeable or, you know, so doing, implementing, when he comes. Verse 44, "Truly I say to you that he will make him ruler all over all that he has." Verse 45, "But if that servant says in his heart, 'My master is delaying his coming,'" you know, that storm will happen later, "and begins to beat the male and female servants and to eat and drink and to be drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him, at an hour when he is not aware, and will cut him in two and appoint his portion with the unbelievers." I'd say that describes destruction. Again, I speak for myself, can look and say, you know what? I thought it was going to happen 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I would have thought it happened by now. When I was 30, I thought by sure. When I'm 53, things would have happened more. Again, we can look and say that storm is going to be so far off in the future that I'm not going to take the effort now to dig deep and implement the things that I know to do. There is a self-deception in that, of course. James 1, verse 22, you don't need to turn there, says, "Be doers of the word." Again, it's all about doing. It doesn't say, you know, be understanding or understand the word. It says, "Be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourself. For anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his face in a mirror, who observes himself, goes away, immediately forgets what kind of man he is." He just self-deceives. I think things are going to be okay. I'm not going to worry about it. Being a doer of the word, because again, we don't know the hour. We don't know the time of that storm. We just know it's coming. The fourth difference, and this is just a quick one, is the foolish builder wastes resources. It's a simple point, but again, destruction is not without cost. A person can attend church for 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, and their story could, again, I pray that not be the case, and I think rare is it the case, but that story could end in destruction. All four of these parables don't end with roses, you know, peaches and ice cream. They end in the world's greatest sermon about and with destruction. About destruction, about that storm, about houses falling, about wide gates leading to not life, but to death. It's important. So again, the fourth lesson is it can be wasted resources. The time, the energy that we put into constructing without a true foundation, which only is really, it's the doing part. It's not just that Christ is the rock. That's the fact of the parable. But the point of the parable, all of these parables, all of these warnings is doing something about it, about doing what we hear, about doing these sayings of mine, Christ says. It's not about knowing Christ is the rock. Of course we know that. Ask any Christian, is Christ the rock? Every Christian on earth probably knows that is true. But how many are actually doing the sayings of his? And we can be guilty of that too. So just as a house rests on a foundation, of course, our lives must rest on Christ. We know that. But as important as hearing the word is, doing the word is as or more important. We can hear it all day long and not do it. Again, doing the word is important. We hear word in such a way that we take action and do it. I'd like to conclude by reading 1 Corinthians 3, verse 9. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 9. I'll read a few verses here. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 9. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. Skipping to verse 11, 1 Corinthians 3. For no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if anyone builds on this foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each one's work will become clear. For the day, again, the trial, the storm, will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test each one's work, our house, of what sort it is. If anyone's work which he has built on endures, he will receive a reward. We must be wise builders by doing God's will.